You know that feeling. It's Sunday night, and you haven't even started the term paper that's due tomorrow at 9 a.m. Or there's final exams, and you're about as ready for those as you are to wingwalk at 7:37. Or there's a storm front moving in, and you decided to wait another year to put a new roof on the house. Or maybe it's April 14, you're self-employed and just never got around to putting aside some jing for tomorrow's tax bill. That feeling, that knot in your stomach, that tightness in your jaw, that's not fear. Fear is fight or flight. Fear is usually fleeting. No, this feeling doesn't go away. It's like a bad hangover or a cold you can't shake. This feeling is anxiety. This is the new normal in the United States of anxiety.
The safari park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hands off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
You know I have a thing for Doomsday. I've done a bunch of shows about it. I call it my End of Days suite. It's all so much fun. I've explored so many Doomsday scenarios. Here's a clip from the very first one, Larry Preps, from episode 7 in the January 2017 archive at thatlarryshow.com. It is one of the most downloaded shows I've ever produced.
2.5 minutes. To a dystopian nightmare, a monochromatic eternal twilight of throat-searing thick gray smoke roiling with irradiated particles, an unceasing drizzle of acid rain over a burning cityscape of broken concrete and twisted steel, one vast smoldering no-go zone where gunfire echoes through canyons of shattered glass towers as warring gangs fight it out for the dwindling scraps necessary for survival. Food, water, and ammunition. Corpses litter the asphalt as rats and vultures feast upon them. Fortunes in U.S. currency blow through the rubble-strewn streets and gather in corners, drifts of worthless money. Cries of the sick and dying are quickly muffled by their companions. As the food supplies diminish, cannibalism rages. 21st century mankind, with all its technological majesty, is self-destructing with the original form of class warfare. Hunters and prey.
Here's a taste of Nuclear Armageddon from episode 39 about that porky little dictator in North Korea. He flops into a swivel chair before a console covered with a keyboard and toggles and blinking rocker switches surrounding one solitary hinged metallic cylinder. He presses a thumb onto the scanning pad, and the cylinder opens, revealing a glowing red plunger button. His nail-bitten fingers drunkenly hover over that button, and then, as the launch sequence begins, he reclines in his chair with a feeling he's never before known in his 30-some years of existence, and that feeling is achievement. He's finally done something. And demolition must sometimes precede renewal, mustn't it? That as those warheads streak across the Pacific, millions in the U.S. go about their lives, oblivious to their impending doom. U.S. missile defense systems launch their answers from silos and subs. A lone fisherman off the Solomon Islands sees the ocean's surface boil and the pre-dawn sky lit up by the thrusters of Trident II's arcing inexorably westward. A farmer running his combine across a Nebraskan cornfield, observes a contrail like he has never seen before and wonders if this is his last harvest. And soon, in Los Angeles, San Francisco, Phoenix, Denver, and metro areas eastward spanning the continental United States, priorities are irrevocably adjusted. The engines of the economy, iPhones and fashion and cosmetics, are rendered the useless, worthless crap that they always were. In a few dozen flashes, politics and politicians are moot. The zeitgeist of the selfie is replaced by survival. And that may be exactly what mankind needs. And there's so much fun about doomsday. Movie doomsdays, book doomsdays, video game doomsdays, and at least with all of those, you have a fighting chance. But ask any actuary. Those are the professional prophets. Odds makers, not about NFL or heavyweight fights. These guys cook the books for MetLife and State Farm and Aetna. They really know about doomsday, too. The real doomsday. The one we'll all eventually face solamente. And they'll tell you, odds are you are not going to expire in a zombie apocalypse or World War III or United States Civil War II, or from a meteor strike, or...
The world is going to end in 12 years if we don't address climate change.
Sorry, Congress chick, you are incorrect. When you croak, it's probably going to sound like this. Lying in some railed bed, where dozens of other slobs have winked out with tubes up their noses and asses. Nothing remotely heroic or spectacular. That's what the actuaries will tell you. And they make a lot of dough because they tend to be good at what they do. Unlike most of those other, what do we call them, huh? Prophets? That's not a good word choice. It's shaded with the biblical. The most famous non-biblical one was Nostradamus. I've read his quatrains. And you could interpret that shit to mean anything from Hitler's going to war to Mr. Rogers is going for pizza. His writings are that nebulous. Every day, there's a new crisis or doomsday scenario designed to make people uneasy, worried, anxious. That reminds me of one of the most ill-used words in the English language. How many times have you heard somebody say, "I'm really anxious to meet you"? A better word choice would be, "I'm really eager to meet you." People might be anxious about meeting the dentist or the bankruptcy attorney or the judge or the surgeon. Yeah, fear is fight or flight, and unless we live in a war zone, fear should be an uncommon emotion. But anxiety, that's become homeostasis for these United States, hasn't it? If they're not inventing new reasons to be anxious, they're resurrecting old ones and pretending they're new. Like some guy called James Lovelock. He's trending now for a book he's flogging that asserts that mankind... Ooh, is that word okay? Should I say personkind? No, whatever. That human beings are soon to relinquish dominion over the earth to... machines. Now, Lovelock's an Englishman, and his credentials are... environmentalist and... futurist. I get the environmental part. That's a real and legit field of study, but futurist, huh? That's a little vague. Can you take a course in the future? Who would teach that? What would the exams be like? Do you make predictions 1 week out and then wait and see? But that almost sounds too easy.
Okay, class, your assignment is to teleport to the year 2525 and write a full report when you return. See you Monday.
Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, huh? I think I'll start introducing myself at parties as a futurist. I like the sound of that. Lovelock is also 100 years old. So any day now, That title's going to have to morph to what? Pastist? Lovelock's book is called Novocene, and in it, he posits that, quote, "The understanders of the future will not be humans, but what I choose to call cyborgs that will have designed and built themselves." That's a fascinating statement. The understanders of the future. What the fuck does that mean? Don't you love it when people just pull made-up words out of their asses to explain some goofy theory? The understanders. A few decades ago, Lovelock had another theory that's gotten a lot of traction over the years. The Gaia hypothesis. Which is that the Earth is a self-adjusting living organism. And maybe it is. Maybe it senses there are too damn many of us crawling over each other. So it cooks up a nice plague to thin out the herd. Typhus or bubonic or smallpox or malaria. It even has a delivery system, rat fleas or mosquitoes. Pretty damn efficient. The Earth itself is the greatest purveyor of doomsday. Heavyweight champion of all time, by a huge margin, is tuberculosis, with over 1 billion killed. Next is malaria, with 50 billion, followed by smallpox, with a paltry 500 million dead. War, or as they like to call it now, hatred, is a distant second, and natural disasters are down there with indigestion and bathroom falls. The Gaia hypothesis raises an interesting conundrum for environmentalists who want to protect the Earth. It does not look as if the Earth is trying to protect us. George Carlin had some great commentary about the Gaia hypothesis and environmentalism.
The Earth doesn't share our prejudice towards plastic. Plastic came out of the Earth. The Earth probably sees plastic as just another one of its children. Could be the only reason the Earth allowed us to be spawned from it in the first place. It wanted plastic for itself. Didn't know how to make it. Needed us. Could be the answer to our age-old philosophical question, why are we here?
Plastic. Assholes.
So now, Lovelock thinks we're soon to be usurped by machines. Machines so smart and competent, they will regard us the same way we regard plants. Imagine that. Hey, wait. Didn't somebody already imagine that? Yeah, like the Wachowski brothers. Well, now sisters, but they were brothers when they wrote The Matrix. Human batteries or human plants farmed by machines. What's the difference? But the idea of AI and robots is not new. In fact, it's pretty damned old. There was a play written by a Czech dude named Karel Kapek. A century ago, it was called RUR, which stood for Rossum's Universal Robots. In fact, they weren't even exactly robots. They were part machine, part flesh and blood. Sound familiar? Yeah, damn right it does. And those robots got smarter and smarter and took over the world in 1921. Sounds a lot like the Terminator, too, and the replicants of Blade Runner fame, and a fuck ton of other sci-fi stories. But Lovelock is saying it's happening now, or any day now. The story was splashed around many news aggregators with the ominous headline of "Cyborgs Will Replace Humans," as if it's fait accompli. But he's really just another sci-fi writer. However, Lovelock does have one powerful credential, placing him on the side of reason and truth and logic. And that position probably didn't pan out very well for him. He's been a long-standing member of an outfit called the EFN. That's Environmentalists for Nuclear. It promotes nuclear energy for a cleaner world. And that it would be, if not for the fearmongers who believe windmills and solar are the answer. They aren't. but they sound so safe. A few episodes ago, I did a show called Is Fear Killing America? And it may well be. But just as there are levels of influenza, so are there gradations of fear. And a low-grade fear fever would be anxiety. You're not quite at the point of fight or flight, but you've got this constant knot in your gut, a feeling that all is not right and could go terribly wrong at any moment. What is the solution? Drugs, of course. Not recreational drugs, but the ones doctors give you to tame anxiety. Paxil and Zoloft and Xanax and Valium and Librium and Wellbutrin and Cymbalta and Effexor. Oh, how do they think of those sexy names? Over 300 million prescriptions written every year, and that's just for the top 10 psychotropics. Big Pharma racks up close to $500 billion in annual revenues in the United States of anxiety. So now guys like this Lovelock invent anxiety triggers, and the media just eats it up. By the time many of us are mature enough to appreciate our grandparents, they're dead. Especially if we happen to be Irish. We tend to start families late. My grandfather was an amazing guy. He died when I was 17, and I didn't realize how totally cool he was until I was much older. He had emigrated to the States as a pretty young dude, brought his family over from Ireland, raised them all to be successful, productive citizens with zero help from the government, no free health care, no free tuition, no subsidized housing or food, nothing. But beyond that, he had a lot of wisdom. He always took care of business, but at the same time, I don't think he ever had a sleepless night or a moment of anxiety in his life. He laughed at everything. In his mid-80s, when the doctors told him he had a few months to go, he actually said to me, "Well, hell, I don't remember worrying about being born, so I'm not going to worry about dying." A couple of days before he died, he still had me placing bets for him at OTB, like he hadn't a care in the world. I've never met anyone like him since. Just extraordinary. I can recall being a younger kid, my mom going to him with this or that worry, and he'd cross his legs and light up a Camel and say, "Let's see now." And usually, she left his house with some kind of workable solution. Had he lived to see all this insane shit today, he'd probably die laughing. People getting their shorts and knots over headlines, stocking up on emergency supplies, building bomb shelters and panic rooms. It's fucking absurd. Sure, there were doomsday predictions in his day, as there have been since the dawn of time. But he and his generation had a sense of perspective about it. One of his favorite lines was, "We're all just fleas on a dog's back." I suppose he had his own version of Gaia. Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. For longer than I should have, I've been promising a new bonus episode, and it's just been posted at patreon.com/thatlarryshow. The title is Larry's Date with One Supermodel, Two Cops, and Nine Zombies. It's an amazing but true story of my date with a supermodel and how it morphed into one of the most bizarre and unforgettable evenings of my life. Here's a tiny spoiler. The nine zombies were consumed by a guy at the next table who flipped out in a display of drunken violence, the likes of which I've not seen since. Here's a little sample from that episode. And as Tony walks past that table, he just stops and stares at it like he spotted his credit card on it. Then, he puts his hands above his head, like Rocky on the steps. "Where the fuck am I going?" He jumps up on the table and starts kicking the china off it. Plates, are flying around the room like skeet targets. Some of the glasses he kicks shatter on impact. Busted glass shrapnel. Terry and I get down below table level. Everybody in the place takes cover. There are more than 24 other bonus episodes there as well. From a home invasion to decoding chick speak to a trilogy on revenge. Love in the hashtag MeToo age. 10 secret words they use to manipulate you and more. Have a look for yourself. Now, over 200 other episodes can be found at thatlarryshow.com, along with additional content and commentary, videos, images, and more. While there, click a subscribe button. Android, Apple, Stitcher, whatever. It costs nothing. That way you never miss an episode. If you want to help the cause, slide over to iTunes and give the show a 5-star review. That helps too. So my friends, if you're living with anxieties, and who among us is not, try to ignore the bullshit and manufactured ones. And remember another thing my grandpa said. Life is short. Eat dessert first. Until next time, take no shit.